What is recording and why am I doing it?
Top five secrets your recording engineer doesn't want you to know
will be discussed on today's episode of the Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 66. Today is May the 12th, Saturday, I may add. I'm Cookie. Hi.
I'm Neil.
And I'm Scott, possessor of no cool nicknames.
Yep.
I didn't think the consensus would be so one-sided.
Do you want to tell me what my cool nickname is then?
I mean, mine was specifically for me. I really wasn't considering your position, which we'll talk about my lack of perspective of other people's emotions and feelings as we dig into this a little bit further. But for now, do you have a cool nickname, Neil? Did you ever get called T-Bone in high school? Or
I had a cousin that was called T-Bone on occasion, but no, I think the only thing I've ever had that actually stuck at all was when I was a kid, I used to have the nickname of Nini.
We're talking
pre-grade school, for that matter.
Nini? Absolutely. I didn't expect people to be calling you Nini on your way to prom.
Yeah, and...
Hey, oh, Nini, what's up?
Hey, Nini, yeah. Yo. And then only to realize, 25-some years later that Nini can be used for older brother in Japanese.
Congratulations on your diploma, Nini. You've worked especially hard for this.
I hope your girlfriend is doing well, Nini.
Wife at that point,
Now, if you said that there was a rapper or some like entertainer named Nini in 2018, I'd be like, okay, that sounds normal.
Is there not?
No, not to my knowledge. But like, I remember in high school,
then the path is clear for you.
Rapper or singer named Neo came out. N-E-Y-O.
Neo, yeah.
And how do you spell Nini?
I don't know. I don't think there was ever an established spelling. I would either imagine... I'd imagine it's either N-I-I or N-E-E.
Yeah.
Squared.
Because you don't want to have N-I-N-I, like Nini. Which is now your new nickname, as I've decided it's my favorite of the selection.
Isn't Nini N-I-N-N-Y?
That is another way to do it, but
There is a rapper named Uncle Nini, N-E-E-N-E-E. He is a white guy with a very ginger beard.
How old is he? As long as he's older than Neil can still keep Nini. Because he's Uncle Nini. He's taking a modifier to his age.
I don't know how old Uncle Nini is, but he looks about
Neil's age.
Yeah. So that vague age between he's older than 26.
Oh.
he's older than 26 and younger than 62.
Yeah. It's tough to gauge people in that range.
Anyway, he's from Virginia.
What have you guys been up to this weekend, besides estimating Neil's age?
Oh, Golden Kamuy.
Yeah, have you actually watched that?
I don't even know what that is.
Okay. it's a... I've dedicated my anime time this season to both Megalobox, which is getting fucking intense, and I won't spoil a thing to anyone who's also enjoying watching along with me. But this
it's
last episode
as,
of Megalobox was, I think, only like further gave me confidence that I chose a good show to watch this season. Because it had me kind of reeling in between the moments of that episode. But the other anime I've been watching is something called Golden Kamuy. I don't know. I feel bad that I can't pronounce this right, but I also...
You're on with Kamui.
Okay. I thought it was like Kamui, but let's be honest. I don't speak Japanese, and I especially don't speak the Ainu language, and so I'm double out of luck on this one. But this
why does
is,
the main character look like he's a JoJo character?
He does look like a JoJo character with his hashtag scar across his face.
Hashtag scarf. That's really
his hashtag
JoJo.
Scarf. Yeah. This is a cool anime. I really enjoy it. It is one of the worst looking animes I've ever seen when it comes to implementation of some like 3D elements and whatnot. There are bears that have appeared on multiple occasions throughout the show, and the large adult bears look like shit, look like utter garbage, and are incredibly jarring against the rest of the anime's, I guess, art and animation. But the story is too good for me to care. I'm intrigued by this. I wouldn't say angry young man, but determined young man, Sugimoto, the immortal Sugimoto, who essentially faces death with the fiery passion that, in fact, he's going to refuse to die, and that's all you need to do to stay alive. Between him and his companion, Asripa, I believe is how you pronounce her name, they are on the hunt for treasure in this, I believe in the Hokkaido region of Japan. After, I think it's like early 20th century, if I remember correctly, after the Russo-Japanese War in some of the northern islands. But anyway, if you guys are looking for an extra anime to throw in, this one is like, it's got everything. It's heartfelt. It's, interesting. It has a bit of action, and it has like terrible 3D animation. It check marks every box.
Why is that a box?
I don't know. Ever since I'm trying to think of the first animation I saw that had the 3D graphics that jarred the hell out of me and made me think, have we realized that we could, but we never stopped to think if we should when it comes to adding like 3D CGI into an otherwise 2D media.
Berserk?
Oh, Berserk is another perfect example of this. But I haven't actually watched Berserk. It's one of the few things that I almost exclusively read. Partially because I need to take it at a very slow pace for my stomach and mental composure, but also because it is kind of ugly in that 3D style.
Sweet. I'll have to give it a try. Since we are talking about anime, there's a few I've been watching. Just a couple. Seraph of the End, A Vampire Reign. I've really been enjoying that. It's a dystopian future where 90% of the human population was wiped out. Vampires exist for some reason, and they're feeding off the humans that are left and farming them, basically. And angels exist?
Are you asking a question?
Maybe. Kind of. It doesn't matter.
Is that the title of the anime?
Yeah. Does the title have the question mark in there?
Nah, no question mark in this one. This is just Seraph of the End.
Oh, okay.
Vampire Reign. Then I guess for anyone who listens to this podcast and watched Steven Universe, that latest Steven bomb. I can't give away any spoilers because fuck me.
Oh yeah, shit. I have been so out of the loop on that for a while now.
Oh my god, I forgot you watched this. Scott, no, you need to. Scott.
It's been more than a year, I think, since I've seen an episode. Like, I'll do my best. I'll get back on the wagon. Don't worry.
Oh my god, Scott. Like,
I'll watch it the same time I buy PS Plus.
Has it been revealed that Steven Universe, or the Steven character, the titular character, is actually in a mental ward?
He's an alternate universe?
That he's actually in a fever dream and this is all happening in a coma?
No.
Nah, unfortunately not.
I'm glad they haven't taken that direction.
I think that would be less polarizing than the last direction they did take.
It's polarizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on that like had the community. It's kind of split the community now.
Interesting. Okay, you may have picked my interest enough for me to get back
and,
in.
And like, I can't say anything because too fresh and it's too good. And oh my god, like, so Lizzie was trying to get me to watch the episode like all the day that it came out, the two episodes that came out, and she was like, okay, we need to watch these episodes. I was like, we'll watch them before bed. So then we watched them before bed, and then we couldn't go to sleep.
Oh man, that's pretty intense. I always am surprised by how good that show is for how low my expectations were when it was recommended for me to watch. Like, we're talking pretty much the absolute lowest bar I expected it to overcome, and it actually ended up being like a super excellent show that I had then watched faithfully until finally getting distracted by I don't even know what. And you're doing a much better job convincing me to watch this than to get PS Plus.
Fuck PS Plus. If it's gonna distract you from watching this, oh my god! Like,
then we'll pass.
Shit, it was like, what would you rather have seen? The last two episodes of Steven Universe or the next season of Game of Thrones? Honestly, I need the next two episodes of Steven Universe now because of that last fucking episode. They're just like, what? Yeah, no, it's. Yeah, fuck Game of Thrones. Steven Universe is where all the feels are right now.
Okay, Neil, we need to shake Cookie off of this. We need to get him away from the edge of potential euphoric spoilers. What have you been up to?
Well,
I was going to say Persona 5 is also really good. And I watched The Boy and the Beast.
I actually did catch up a little bit on that. And you're right on the last time we recorded and talked about it. You definitely do have to get to the points where the story slightly deviates from what your experience is in the game, and then all of a sudden it's a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Also, the characters showing up just like in the transitory scenes where, is it Ren or Rey? I can't remember. I think it's Ren. The main character is like walking or moving through town, and you see a character that you're like, ooh, there's a social link that you're just not aware of yet.
it's kind of nice.
They're nice little Easter eggs. Yeah, I like it. All right, I'm done.
But yeah, that and The Boy and the Beast. The Boy and the Beast. Good movie. Everyone should watch it.
It is a good movie. Have you seen Wolf Children?
I have not.
Got a little drunk with my friends, watched Wolf Children, cried my eyes out. It's a good movie.
So what have you been up to, Neil?
Well, speaking about potential spoilers and whatnot, before I go on that, I wanted to ask, have you either of you started watching Westworld season 2?
Nope.
Nope.
Not going to either.
Really?
I hear it's very complicated, and I'm fine with leaving a little complication out of my life for now in my media viewing habits.
But that's also like the mass majority of people telling you it's complicated. Do you think your intelligence level when it comes to consuming media happens to correspond with or like is it
average?
Mostly average or is it above average?
I would posit that even if I believe that my media consumption is above average, which my analysis of the This Is America video demonstrates contrary to that, there's a lot of shit that sometimes I do not pick up on. I would say that the people who have been... Actually, I don't even know that many people bringing it up, so maybe the point I was going to make doesn't matter. I'm confident that if I watched it and made sure that that was the only activity going on in the room, I could probably keep up. But I don't know if that's really a reason to motivate me to do it.
I saw Westworld and Future World, so I think I'm good. Good on the futuristic Western take on life.
I get you.
Yeah, I watched Firefly and Cowboy Bebop. I'm done with future Westerns. And Trigun. How many future Westerns are there? I didn't realize it was a genre.
Outlaw Star.
Is Outlaw Star also one?
Actually, no, it's less of a Western. It's got more magic in it, I guess. So never mind. I rescind Outlaw Star.
Okay. Well, Neil, I think it's okay if you want to do some spoiling or if you just want to talk about it. You're not going to have to worry about doing
No, I was actually just curious if you guys had, because I was considering renewing my HBO Go membership while I'm out of town this week, and I would probably catch up on Westworld as a part of that.
Oh, I was going to say, don't consider Cookie and I's viewership as a reason to or not to renew your subscription.
The first season was pretty damn good. If you're ever just stuck with nothing to watch, I'd recommend it. But that's hardly a problem these days. So while we are hot off the topic of anime, then maybe it's prudent for me to talk about Steins Gate, which I know is airing its current, or it may have just finished up its new season. But I've been playing the game.
No, I don't think so.
I think
Steins
Gate new season is like halfway through.
Okay.
I've only got two episodes here.
I've been playing the original Steins Gate game, the Steam version, which I've brought up in the past, and I just wanted to quickly check in since I've started to get a little further into the story. I don't think I've hit like a climax or anything, but I've started to understand a little bit about like what the premise is and how the whole John Titor reference is kind of tied into the story. Are you guys familiar with who John Titor is? I'm assuming so if you've watched the show.
John Titor?
Is it Titor?
It's Titor.
Titor?
Titor.
I have no idea which one it is because I'm hearing Japanese voice acting, which is saying Titor, and it occurs to me that it's probably not correct.
Actually, I've watched it in Japanese and in English. They stick with Titor on both.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fun fact.
What's the fun fact? Oh, that is the fun fact. Okay.
Yeah, that it doesn't change no matter where you're watching it. So, how are you enjoying... Wait. God bless you, my child. May you go with the grace of Neil's God.
Excuse me. What? It's enjoyable so far. Like, I've already had like the I see where this is going sort of, so to speak, point, which is relatively early on when the main character Okarin is talking to his friend about John Titor, asking him like, "Hey, don't you remember this from 10 years ago?" And the friend's like, "What are you talking about? Like, no, you don't. There have been books on it." It's like, no. We talked about this a couple months ago or a couple years ago, when it's basically revealed to the player that the protagonist has already somehow jumped to a different timeline or a different. I'm assuming it's a timeline, so I imagine things will only start to get more and more complex from there.
So you're not even at like the good part yet? Okay.
Yeah. No. I expect there's going to be a lot more crazy stuff. I really do like how the cast seems full of ridiculously strange people. Like, I don't think there's a single normal person in that cast at all.
Yeah, that is definitely part of the charm.
And the game does a pretty good job of like giving you a protagonist that you cannot really identify with all that well. Yet at the same time, they also start to make you feel more like that protagonist through the events happening around him. Like, for people that don't know, I don't know if I even talked or scratched the surface of the story before, but you follow like, or you play as this delusional young man who goes to college in Japan. And when I say delusional, he truly does believe that like there's a secret organization coming to get him because he's this mad genius scientist. But it's fairly obvious to the player that he's kind of full of shit, or at least potentially that's what we believe at the start, at least. But at the same time, like there's a level of paranoia that you also start to develop as you see the inconsistencies between these potential timelines or universes or whatever. And so, like, being a rational human being playing as this irrational, paranoid character, it's surprising how the paranoia kind of starts to set in as well for you, is what I'll say.
Yeah, you're not going to spoil anything because I've seen the show.
I don't know if I know anything twice. To spoil yet, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, and hopefully after you beat it, you'll actually watch the show, and then you can tell us what's the difference.
Yeah, that would be good to know.
Or if it's like a Persona the animation versus Persona the game type of thing.
Well, I'm assuming just based on the fact that there's going to be so many, there's going to be one true path, quote unquote, that the anime and game will be more or less the same.
The canon path.
But then there's going to be, who knows, like a dozen different endings and paths that you can take that will vary differently or change subtly. I'm curious exactly where the branches in the story are happening, because I've already been using the phone in ways, which is like the principal mechanic, it seems like, to alter what happens around you. And I don't think, I haven't felt like a point in time that has made me think, oh, I should probably save before I do something here. So if I have like already gone down different paths, they've done a good job of hiding that.
Holy shit. Wait, using the phone alters like what's going on around you in the game?
Yeah, or at least like...
Oh man, once the thing happens, you are going to have such a time because, yeah,
such
wow.
Such a time.
Oh, it's time traveler humor. Oh, you get it?
No, just thinking about like what happens in the anime and the fact that you now have choice in what's happening in the game. Yeah. Wow. Man. Oh,
you're
going
to have to follow up, Neil. That's for sure.
Definitely. Yes. Yes. Okay. Anyway. Hi. My name is Cookie. I talk on a podcast named Fancy Ramen.
Aside from that, I just had one other game I have been playing that I haven't talked about before, and that's called Fairy Fencer F. It's basically just it's like the typical anime bullshit game I play. in this case, it's actually not that bad, though. The combat system is turn-based RPG. Your turns are decided by like characters' speed ratings, and then also what actions or spells or whatever you take, which may or may not allow you to move faster or slower afterwards, or have your turn come about. But the battles take place on the same map that you're actually moving around in, or like the same dungeon you're actually moving around in, but you only have like a certain radius you can move in, and you have a certain attack range, and your skills and effects also have a specific range. I'm assuming this is very similar to the company's other series called Hyperdimension Neptunia, I think is the title, which is a fictitious series about the personification of video game consoles and computers. I'm not going to go into detail on that. But it's actually been pretty enjoyable. Combat is pretty refreshing, and when you're strong enough, you can just get through battles pretty quickly, which is always a nice benefit. Kind of like how Persona 5, you're never annoyed that you have to go through a series of easy battles because of loading screens or whatever. It goes fast enough. The one thing that made me curious, or I guess like the one mechanic in the game that made me kind of remember this game a little more than any others I've been playing, is that like part of the lore has you pulling out seals or destroying seals from these two gods. And one god is obviously the good god, and the other god is like very notably the bad god, because it's named the Vile God between the two. And the idea is that if you break off all of the seals off of either of these entities, that they're going to be fully resurrected. And assumedly, if both of them are resurrected, then like the battle between the two, like good and evil, would then continue. But in doing, like in breaking the seals on one, would reach what I would assume would be like a good ending or the bad ending or whatever. Who knows? There might be a twist. But in breaking the seals, you also get powers. So it's an interesting, they present like an interesting choice to the player where you're able to, and you're able to essentially do the bad thing, but at the benefit of getting added bonus powers or points or whatever the case is. And without spoiling myself, I've been trying to like, I've been cautious about breaking off the seals from the bad character, but the benefits are usually better than breaking the seals from the good character. So I just found it interesting that the game had like this moral dilemma between being powerful or being good. Not to say you can't just grind it out and be good and not break any seals off of the bad character, but interesting.
Yeah, it's nice when a game makes you make sacrifices in order to do the good path, which is more realistic and say the what we could call the BioShock version, in which you can say, let's see, is it the, I think it's BioShock 2. It might be the same in BioShock 1. I didn't play it. But whether you offer up little sisters or you rescue them, like you're still going to get benefits of roughly the same magnitude. While what would be more, I guess, what would be more true to the narrative in the game would be giving up the little sisters leaves you more vulnerable and like weaker, underpowered. And therefore, the temptation to like take the worse option is dangled in front of you and has more like weight or impact.
But Scott, do you choose the cage or the bird?
I don't know. Wait, I don't know what that's. Is that BioShock Infinite?
Yeah, that's Infinite. It doesn't.
See,
I don't think
I played
it has
that game
meaning.
Start to finish, and I'm not sure I even understand what you're saying still, which is sad. That game was too hectic for me.
Too hectic, really? Just in terms of the gameplay?
Yeah, I'm not particularly good at that type of shooter. So I just was like hanging on by threads by the end of the game.
I actually just looked up, does it matter if I choose the bird or the cage?
Does it?
Well, the answer is, well, not directly, so don't worry about it. The point is here, you made a decision. Oh, actually, read only after finishing the game. Thanks to this choice, you will almost immediately notice that the girl at the end is not Elizabeth, since she doesn't have the brooch you selected for her. It was a nice touch by the game creators. Oh.
Mm. So it does matter, and you just gave away the ending. Gosh darn it, Neil.
That's okay. How old is this game?
3 years old?
Maybe more.
4 years old?
I think it's older than that.
Came out in 2013, apparently, so 5 years.
5 years old.
I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Okay. So the choice itself doesn't actually matter. What games have you guys been playing, though?
Well, speaking of choices that matter, Neil, I've been playing a game called The Red Strings Club. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before. It seemed like when I put it on the docket, you were interested in the fact that it was on there. So I'm imagining you have. Or maybe you're familiar with the developer that made it, Deconstruct Team, because I'm pretty sure we have brought up on the podcast before a game called what is it?
Gods Will Be Watching.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another game that I've played of theirs, but it wasn't able to hold my interest after the third scenario. And so
But before I let you continue on that, I really do want to say you should you should play through that game even on the easiest setting, and just get through and experience the story, because I think it has a I don't want to make it sound like it's amazing or anything. It's a solid story that they tell, and definitely worth experiencing.
I just felt really bad after I let my black friend die in the second scene, because I was a bad negotiator. And
so
that kind of hung over my head.
Hold up. All right. So while we're on the subject, just to kind of bring in Cookie for a second, Gods Will Be Watching is this weird game which centers around puzzles that are usually presented in much more dire circumstances. And the first scenario has your characters essentially
managing a hostage situation in which you're the ones who have taken the hostages.
Yes, and isn't that alone such an interesting start to a game?
Yeah, it is. Like, each one of these scenarios has been good, except I got to the one where you're like trying to you're trapped and you're trying to craft essentially an antidote to get out. I thought to myself, I'm going to end up killing most of these people, and I feel really bad about what happened to my partner in the last scene. So,
I
stopped.
I want to point that out. Like, in the second scenario, you get captured in the first scenario, regardless of what you do. This game is linear within that regard.
Mm-hmm. But I
so
know
the
that
second
you're...
scenario is essentially the two of your characters are getting interrogated on, like, at a prison facility, and
the black guy gets his arm chopped off.
Well, actually, I think depending either character can get their arm chopped off, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, depending on what you do, either character can suffer the consequences. And my first time playing it, unfortunately, my buddy was like pulled apart at the spine, and it both grossed me out and made me feel really bad.
So, Scott, did you ask yourself the question why that when I'm assuming you finished that scenario with him dead, correct?
Yes.
Then why in the third scenario he was with you again alive?
Oh, well, I actually went back and redid it after I finished that scenario and tried to complete it where he was alive. And so I ended up going, I ended up saving him the second time, but I still feel really bad about the first time because I just did not do a good job.
Okay.
I wasn't going to leave him dead, Neil. No man left behind.
Well, I mean, like, I guess I just spoiled something, but let it stand.
It's
that
no child's left behind.
If he dies,
then how, like, can he show up later? Yeah,
exactly.
It's probably it's anachronistic in how it's presented, I imagine, where you're getting flashbacks to different moments in time, which also explains if I were to like lose my arm, why I'd still have my arm in that scene or in the third scene.
Yep.
You are prepared for Steins Gate. Okay. Anything else you want to say about that before we get into some Red Strings Club?
Yeah. The game is better if you play and lose a shit ton, because then the ending, like the payoff in the ending, feels way more valuable.
Oh, okay. Then trying to get the perfect outcome every time.
Yeah, just kind of do what you have to do, you know, make it through the game, because you can always replay and try for the like a perfect result afterwards, but that's really not what the game's about. The game is literally about
my stats comparatively. Like, that's the one thing, Cookie, I think that's really cool about Gods Will Be Watching, is you see how other players have approached scenarios and their success. And I just had I didn't have great success rates compared to my peers, and so I felt extra bad. Like, the peer pressure made me quit the game.
There's a scenario where you're going to find yourself just saying, okay, there's no way I can save everyone. Like, it's no longer a question of how do I come up with a way to save everybody. It's more a question of, all right,
who's
people
really
are going
saving
to die. Do I like? Oh, it's such a fucking great moral dilemma. I mean, like, you know what? I think it's old enough. I'm just going to say you're basically presented with.
Wait, don't say it.
Yeah,
don't say
I
it.
Own okay. The game. I can go back and play it.
It's only $1.99.
Yeah, it's definitely
this.
Worth playing, dude. We should do a let's play of that.
We should.
Well, we should. You got to come over to my house at least once.
Yeah, yeah. My schedule should be a little freer. Okay, so let's put that to rest, Lynn. Let's talk about the Red Strings Club.
In the same way that you feel the dire need to make the right choices and an inability to erase past mistakes, the Red Strings Club follows up on that, I think, quite effectively. Every conversation that I've had in this game, and mind you, I've only been playing it for 2 hours, but it was a very intense 2 hours, and if I had not needed to get up to use the bathroom, I probably would have missed the podcast because I was so enthralled with this. The game feels incredibly organic as you move through it, and the basic premise that I'll give you without spoiling anything is you take control of a small group of characters that find themselves involved in becoming aware of a large corporation's plot to do potentially serious harm to society as a whole. And it is your stated goal to take down said corporation through making pottery implants on a lathe that affect implanted humans or augmented humans' abilities, serving really amazing cocktails at your bar, the Red Strings Club, and making phone calls as well as interacting with different people in the community. And although that may sound as a very unorthodox way to take down a corporation, it so far is working phenomenally well. Phenomenally well within the context of the story. And I'm just completely enraptured by the idea of this game. It's also very, I would say it is a game that I would first off recommend anybody who is used to playing games on, say, a laptop without attaching a mouse, using a trackpad, or just foregoing mouse controls for using keyboard controls. This is really not a game that I think you can play very effectively or easily without having a mouse and probably a wide enough mouse pad to do some finite motions and movements, because you're essentially using the mouse for a lot of hand-based skills, whether it's crafting and pouring these cocktails or actually working at this synthetic component lathe to form almost vase-like pieces that you augment your different subjects with. It's got beautiful pixel art, and it's just really, so far, seeming to be a masterpiece in the utilization of unique storytelling, excellent writing, character writing, and cohesive and thematically relevant music. Every character seems to have a musical score or theme that is associated with them, and during different moments throughout the game where different scenes or emotional experiences between you and the patrons at the Red Strings Club are accented by changes in those themes, and it is really well executed in the sense that you don't notice it until you kind of step away from the moment for a second and realize that you're feeling the tension not only from the writing and the well executed pixel art, but also the music perfectly reflecting the scene. And man, Neil, this is a game that I would recommend, especially to someone like you who likes a narrative game and is quickly becoming one of the coolest indie games I've played in a long time, probably since Undertale. But what do you guys know about this game? Do you have any knowledge of it?
So I am just excited to finally to have my game that will be the start of you got these. I'm excited that you found your bartending game. Neil has his bartending game. I want to find my bartending game.
There's something very satisfying about it. What about you, Neil?
I was anticipating the release, and it kind of fell off when it's one of those cases where just other games came in before I picked this one up.
It absolutely snuck by me too. And then I don't know what it is. Oh, it's probably attached to the Gods Will Be Watching game. But because I own that game, I was able to get it for a discounted price on Steam while the Devolver Digital sale was going on.
Like even better than the 33% off that it is right now at $10 and full cent.
Yeah, so I got it for 50% off of that game price because I got the other part of the bundle. I didn't realize that Steam did this, but if you own games in a bundle now and you buy the bundle, you still get the discount that's applied to each game in the bundle, but you have the price of the games you own subtracted off of that. So instead of getting a 33% discount on the game because I own the other bundle item, I got a 50% discount on the game, even though it was the only product I was buying.
Nice.
I think it's a pretty good sales practice. I like it. They're still getting the price that they expect out of the game, knowing that I already fronted up some cash earlier on the other game that I'd be discounted in the bundle. Little do they know, or probably care, that I also got Gods Will Be Watching at a discounted price as well, which was probably 50%. So everybody kind of wins in that scenario.
Well, I've got the bundle in my cart. I just don't have my wallet on me, so I can't actually buy the bundle.
Yeah. But speaking of price manipulation with Steam, I think my favorite thing about this game so far is I don't feel like I'm the most confident person when it comes to reading people. I'm very interested in personal interactions. I think I'm a very sociable person. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I do have difficulty really determining how someone is feeling if they don't explicitly tell me. And this game is very interesting in the realm of the writing being so well done that even though I feel like way out of my league with trying to understand these characters and emphasize or manipulate their emotional states while I'm interacting to ply information from them during the bartending scenes, there is essentially a quiz section that comes afterward that makes sense within the narrative of the game that allows you to really determine how well you understand the characters that you're interacting with. And I've been really enjoying that portion because if you do successfully at it, there are bonus rewards that will help you further down the line. And I'm partially riding on the high that I've been 3 for 3 for these quizzes, but also just really enjoy the extra detail as every interaction that I'm having with someone now is extremely calculated, and it's making the game that much more fun and interesting in interacting not only with the mechanics of it, but how those mechanics ultimately affect my interaction with the written story portions.
I almost made a you're a robot joke, and the reason that you're excited about this is because you can finally relate to humans.
Well, you told the joke.
But that's a good way to present the joke, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's just super cool for me because I thought I would be bad at a game like this, and the fact that I'm doing well at it is interesting, but also just how real all of the interactions and dialogue feels and how easy it is to be immersed in it, I think is also what aids me on that. Like, this is one of the first games where I feel really connected with the dialogue that the character that, say, I'm controlling or making decisions for lines up or meshes with my personal thoughts or how I would try and interact in that situation. And that's a really cool thing too. Like, I think the writing is very smart, and it gives the player a lot of agency with very few options, which is really interesting to me. And it also seems to really give the impression that there is a large variety of branching paths, just as in interactions in real life, that you can only scratch the surface of as you proceed in different directions throughout the game. I think all three of us could play it and end up with very different results. Oh, man. Well, there you go. Salesman of the week over here.
Hope you enjoy that 50 cents out of your commission.
Yeah. I will say, Neil, the thing that will be most interesting to me to hear about your response in the early part of the game is when you're implanting chips into people in order to satisfy the needs that they're requesting from you. So to give you an example, and I promise I'm not spoiling anything too large, you are crafting these pottery-based pieces that are going to help they're mods more or less to help people deal with a certain issue. And the variety of mods that you have available to you are very wide in the scope of what you actually might need to solve the problem. You only get to select one, and there are some that seem to be a perfect fit for the problem that this person is facing. But I found that there are alternative paths that you can take that may actually end up being maybe on the surface or in a black and white comparison, not the best choice. But if you think more critically about the decision, end up having a greater, say, beneficial or negative impact on the subject. And I think you'll find it particularly enjoyable for that section of the game. What makes me really sad is I don't know if it's going to have much of a resurgence later into the gameplay, which is too bad, as it was a pretty enjoyable portion, ultimately. But the Red Strings Club, I will be visiting again very soon, and maybe I'll have more to say next time on the podcast.
Well, Cookie, nice. What have you been playing?
I honestly don't know what I've been playing. I haven't really been playing anything. I'm in a slump. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, I started replaying that one game where you're the devil. No, you're trying to beat the biggest demon of them all, Disgaea 5. I realized I don't remember how to play it. Did not remember how to play that game. I had to start all over. So that was hours down the drain. I don't have any much to say about it, though.
Well, let's wait. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought my computer was my internet was slowing down. So yeah, what were you gonna say?
let's carry on with some news then. First topic of the day, Nintendo has revealed, or of the week rather, Nintendo has revealed details regarding the Nintendo Switch Online service, which is launching September 2018. Notably, I wanted to just go over the plans and pricing and ask you guys how you felt about that, which we're talking individual membership, meaning it's one account per Switch. That's 1 month for $4, 3 month for three months for $8, and a year for $20. Family membership includes up to eight account holders on one console, and that is $35 for the year.
Wait. On one console?
On one console. You probably read that and were like, oh, $35 for both of our Switches.
Nope. $70 for both of your Switches.
Or, I mean, well, since you guys only... It's primarily one person per console in your household, so you're looking at $40
for the year. So $40 for your individuals.
Are we sure?
Yes.
Oh, thanks, Nintendo.
I am, like, almost entirely sure on that.
The pricing seems, I mean, I guess they have less of a developed online system in general, but the pricing's actually lower than I anticipated.
It's lower when you factor in like a single account, but it becomes a little more complicated when you're in a situation like Cookies where you have multiple consoles, multiple Switches.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm used to the old school days of having Gold's membership for two Xbox 360s. So paying $40 for the year rather than paying $40 for the year.
Yes.
Because discounts, all the discounts. It's not that bad, but man, I'm just trying to confirm this family grouping as just only one account.
Or I mean, one console? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's maybe the one point where I understand it when you think about it more, but like there's probably not an easy way to have like Nintendo services acknowledge or recognize that you're a one household, quote unquote, with multiple Switches. So, yeah. And when you think about it that trust. Way, it's only $5 more to have two Switches under a plan a year compared to the $35.
Yeah.
But it does become an issue if you have multiple people in your family playing on multiple Switches.
Because then you need a family plan for each Switch that has multiple people?
Potentially. Like, when you think about what the service entails, if you're not playing Splatoon or ARMS or any online games that would require you to have the online service, and you didn't necessarily want their not being called Virtual Console, their Nintendo Classic service, then you might not even need the plan to begin with.
What this is really solidifying for me is I need to play more games of Splatoon with Cookie, Lizzie, and Ray before my time is up of the free service.
Oh, dude, your time is already up.
Well, it's up in September, right?
Well, yeah.
What is Splatoon? Okay, so...
Oh, Splatoon 2. I mean...
Well, yeah. Right.
I haven't touched that game in so long. No, this doesn't... It doesn't make sense, because, like, why would you even want to have more than one person attached to, like, one Switch? And at that point, why would you just not use that one person's account?
If you had multiple, like, if you had kids that were playing the Switch.
Yeah, if there were four little Cookies running around.
All four little Cookies are just under Cookie at that point.
That's true. And then they ruin your Breath of the Wild account because you can only have one save game.
But you can have multiple cartridges.
Oh. Actually, I don't know if it works that way, because the save data is stored to the
to the device,
to the console.
Shh. Yeah, let me dream. Okay, Nintendo Switch option family plan. Okay, post-based membership. Wait, here it is. As opposed to basic membership that's limited to one account, all of the accounts under a family membership can enjoy benefits even if they're on different systems.
Sorry, say that again.
This is from a GameSpot article talking about the family plan. The paragraph reads, as opposed to basic membership that's limited to one account, all of the accounts under a family membership can enjoy the benefits even if they're on different systems.
Oh, fuck, then I'm wrong. Well, okay. $5 savings. That's
okay. The benefits of the online service include cloud saves, a selection of 20 NES games, and access to online play for all Switch games. Okay. Yeah, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Why would they shoot themselves in the foot like this? Well, I know why they would, but you know. But once again, this is awful of a article on GameSpot.
No, I guess like they don't necessarily. All right, so if I own multiple Nintendo Switch systems, will I need a separate membership for each one? No, Nintendo Switch Online can be used by any device by signing in with the Nintendo account that purchased the membership. Wait,
But then once it becomes the family...
How do I create a family up to 8 accounts? So, okay, so maybe I was... Like, I like how confident I was entering this, and then it occurred to me that, oh, maybe I've misread things. Because how, like, technically then, could we not be a family, Cookie? You could just pay for the $35 and we could reap the benefits of it with our Switch?
Well, technically, I would much rather it be you pay the $35. I can get you my VRV subscription.
I don't think it works that way, man.
VRV?
No, but But so I think what would be required then is, I'm assuming that whoever purchased the family plan would have to be an active login on that console as well.
So now we got to figure out how to set up the family plan.
Interesting. Well, they probably don't even have it ready since it's May. I'm sure it'll work just as well as the Splatoon 2 chat system. Moving on, though. In related Switch news, Nintendo has revealed a new adjustable stand for the Switch that allows charging.
Yeah.
And this is said kind of sarcastically, but hey, it's about time, right?
You know, that's what everybody... I mean, was anybody actually begging for that? When I have the Switch in handheld, or I guess not in docked mode, I've actually... Oh, you know what? You know why I don't have any issues with it? I realize it's because I have a 3D printed mod, thanks to...
Cookie Skamilk. Yeah.
Yeah. My hero.
Yep.
Personally.
That's the thing, like... No one really want or has been begging for it because people have been asking for a dock that is not a dock, like a breakout cable instead.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I did just want to bring it up because maybe there's a glimmer of hope that they're actually listening to us, because this is probably something that was asked for by fans of the system upon release. Now, who knows if we'll actually end up getting a second dock or a breakout cable to replace the dock. Do you guys care about the Neo Geo Mini?
The what?
Wait, we're getting a Neo Geo Mini?
I'll take that as a yes. And actually, I believe the list of games has now been announced. Since I looked up the original Twitter release. So according to Kotaku, the SNK Mini is going to have 40 different games on it. It does not, they do not have the list of titles available yet. But we can all imagine what some of the standards are going to be on it, like Metal Slug, King of Fighters 95, maybe Samurai Showdown, and Cookie, if you look it up, it's literally a miniature cabinet.
Wait, it's literally a minute. Oh my god, I would have to. You know what? Yes, that is something I'm excited about.
Can anyone tell me what a Neo Geo is? Have I lost my podcast credentials?
You just lost your arcade podcast credentials.
Okay, I don't know shit about arcades, so I'm feeling a little better.
So the Neo Geo was a... we'll say it was a specific breed of arcade cabinets, but
it was rock the style. It was the You know how everyone started downloading ROMs for their computer and playing games illegally?
Yeah.
It was the originator of that, but in an actual arcade.
Oh, that's sweet.
So it was pretty much an arcade cabinet with like 80,000 games, but you only really played like 3. Is Neil dead?
No, I'm here. Sorry.
Am I dead? Okay.
Another feeler, but Rage 2, do you guys care about that game?
I didn't play the first Rage, but I heard really good things about it. So
Rage exists.
I could be enticed in picking it up, but I know nothing about it.
Then maybe we skip this one and for the sake of time management.
Okay. Oops. Sounds good.
Our last ticket of the day involves Steam on your smartphone.
Question mark? So Steam is going to be releasing a Steam Link app for your smartphone that'll allow you to stream your games to your smartphone via a, oh God, I've listened to this like 17 times. Your computer has to be on like either really good Wi-Fi or connected to Ethernet.
I mean, this is just another reason to get that newest Razer gaming phone.
Higgs, yeah. Can stream games up to phones at 4K. Wow. Of course, this is going to be the Steam controller will be compatible with your phone once this comes out.
That's pretty sweet. Do you know anyone who owns a Steam controller?
Nope.
We do.
Steam is also... Oh, well, there you go. Neil bought the one.
The only one in existence.
And they're also going to be releasing a movie app, basically.
Is that going to be through Steam, or...?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Videos on Steam, maybe? Nope, not that. God, what is the thing called? Either way, Valve is doing movies as well. And mobile, because fuck it.
I can't wait to play Honey Pop on my phone at work.
And get fired. Neil, what is this? Boss, I'm just trying to optimize my viewership here. And, you know, candy is the best way to do that. Oh, man. I think that's it. Is that it for the news? Is that all we have to say?
Yeah.
Because we kind of hit the hour mark right on the head here. This has been one of the closest time, because once we edit out Neil disappearing off the face of the earth for a minute or two, this is going to be one of the closest, almost non-edited recordings we've had.
I don't think Neil's going to edit any of this, and we're actually just extending the time of this audio at this point.
Okay, then we better cut it. Neil, do your thing.
If you have comments, questions, or concerns, suggestions, recommendations, you can contact us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Also, help us grow our viewership by telling a friend, hit that like button, subscribe.
And then you and your friend together can leave us a review if you're enjoying this podcast. You can do that at Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Please, 5 stars only. We don't want any of this weak 4-star and below stuff.
Also, if you're not enjoying this, go ahead and leave a review as well.
Yeah.
Let us get enough reviews so that
we still want 5 stars, you can put all of the critical words into the text, and I promise we will read them and take them to heart.
I'm making adjustments as we speak. I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Neil. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, Nini.